we've been talking about how little daylight there is and how that can affect our moods. And then add to that, if you live in a place that drizzles a lot, how that can probably affect your mood too. So welcome to this, our fourth session of our four-session support package. And I can see that about a little less than half of the folks who have signed up are on the call. And I've noticed that that's the case every week. And so a lot of you are listening to the recording only. And that's fine, because that would be my style. You know, I definitely am more of a listen to the recording kind of girl if I sign up for something like this. And so I just encourage you, though, if you keep working with me, is sometimes to get on the calls and work with me one-on-one in the group setting, because that's where the real insights can really come from, because then you're all in. And I also know that there are a lot of people that are on the calls but then don't actually get in the hot seats by submitting questions. So just notice that that is your style as well. And the noticing is the only important part, you know, like, is that being a fear avoider? Like, what is that character trait? It might just be your innate true nature, you know, the wallflower true nature. But always be curious about how you're approaching a potential teaching learning situation and how engaged you are and what part of you you're bringing to the table. So with that, I want to get right to the questions. There were only two questions submitted this week. One was actually submitted last week from Glenda, and I don't know if Glenda is on the phone. I actually don't know who I was just talking to about seasonal affective disorder. And then there was another question submitted by Matthew. So let's get started. Glenda, are you on the call? Okay. Well, that is fine. I'm going to bring up the question, but I'm going to speak about it in vague terms because it brings up something that we all struggle with, myself included, today. In fact, three times alone I struggled with this. And what she wrote is basically she's dealing with a lawyer, somebody in her life who, let me just read her question. Like she goes along in her life in a pretty good mood, and then as soon as she has to deal with this person, gets very stressed, very annoyed, worried, fearful, all of that, but she can't not spend some time with this person. So I have had the great misfortune of coming in contact just in the last 24 hours with three people that have been either rude or attacking, and then the third one, you know, based on an hour-long conversation where I gave her my schedule, ignored everything I said, and scheduled me for the times I wasn't available. So basically this question is about how do you deal with people that show up in your life that are a challenge. You have to deal with them. They're right there. You know, how do you deal with them? Oftentimes, like with the person that didn't listen to me for an hour, you know, it was all communicated through email, and I just kind of wrote the nicest possible emails I could, but I was seething inside, and it kept me awake last night. And so when you come in contact with difficult people that you have to deal with, how do you handle that? Well, the question is, I guess we can put on the table, is how would the Buddha handle this? Or how would your highest, most magnificent self, you know, yourself as the Buddha, how would Glenda as the Buddha handle this? And so if Glenda was here, I would ask, what is this lawyer's name? And what we would try to do is have some understanding of what this other person is going through or why they're behaving the way they are behaving. And this is a great practice into getting us to own our own shit. So you've heard the term, you have to walk a mile in somebody's shoes before you can really understand what's going on. And it's very rare that when you really comprehend what another person's perspective is, that you don't get some insights into how you're also behaving badly. So Does anybody want to raise their hand and be in the hot seat right now? Somebody that's maybe pissed off at somebody in their life, or had an altercation with a total stranger in the last week or even today. Anybody want to raise their hand and be in the hot seat for this?
I don't have anybody recent, but I can do it.
Is this Jaquetta?
Oh, yeah, sorry, yes.
Okay. Who has pissed you off the most? When, if it's not recent, then in the last month or 2 months?
A friend.
A friend. And you know, we can pick Donald Trump if you really want. We can go there.
That's easy. 45.
45? What does that mean?
He is president number 45, and he lives about 7 miles from my house, and I hate the fucker.
Okay.
Oh, was that clear? Sorry.
And keep in mind that doing this work with the voice of Donald Trump, you know, we have a lot of preconceived notions about what it's like to be him. You know, there's a lot of people that think that he's mentally ill, myself included. Probably the short list of diagnoses would be sociopath, no ability for empathy, I guess, or no conscience. Is the what a sociopath is, which is different from a psychopath. Sociopath is just no conscience. Might be diagnosable as a narcissist. And, you know, there's a book recently written called Sociopath Next Door that said that I believe 1 in 20 people in the Western world are sociopaths. So it's not that unusual to find people like this. I mean, do you want to speak to as the voice of your friend, or do you want to speak as the voice of Donald Trump, Jaquetta?
Well, the alternative is other drivers on 495 at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. Your choice.
You know what? I think it's more practical to go with other drivers at 5 o'clock in the morning on 495.
Okay, practical. You know, I'm never afraid of a challenge, though. I would have gone there with Trump. But allow me, please, to speak to the voice of a driver on, what is the name of the road?
495.
495 at 5 o'clock in the morning. Who am I speaking to?
I'm the driver on 495 who is behind Jaquetta, and I have my brights on.
Okay. Why do you have your brights on?
I want the car in front of me to get the fuck out of the way.
Okay. So let's also back up a little bit. Are you male? Are you female? How old are you? Why are you up at 4 o'clock in the morning on this road?
I have to go to work.
How do you feel about going to work at 5 o'clock in the morning?
It sucks.
Why does it suck? Like, tell me about your life and why you've made the choice to go to work so early.
I have to.
Have to. It's a strong language choice. Why do you have to?
Because I have to get up to go there in the morning.
Why did you pick a job that requires you to get up so early in the morning?
I didn't pick the job.
Okay. Who picked it for you?
Pause for a second. I'm the other driver. I'm not Jaquetta.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Are you male or female?
I'm everybody.
Okay. And you have a job that you go to that requires you to be there very early in the morning, or maybe you have a long commute that's going to, you know, take 3 hours. I don't know. You tell me. You know, why are you up so early? Is this your choice? Is this something that you like to do, want to do, or need to do?
Need to do. Have to do.
Okay. Maybe you have children that you're supporting. Maybe you're living paycheck to paycheck. I don't know.
I don't either.
You know, maybe you're not. Maybe you just like getting up in the morning. But here you are, driving along, and there's somebody in your way. Is there a lot of traffic?
Yes.
There is. Okay. So you have your brights on, and you're aware of the fact that you have your brights on, yes?
I have my brights on. There's traffic in every lane. There's four lanes.
Okay.
There's traffic in every lane.
Are you aware of the fact that you have your brights on?
I would imagine.
Okay. Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, if you're everybody, I think that maybe you may be aware of having your brights on, or you may not be aware of this, right? It is 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, how much can you really be aware of in the morning? Are you paying attention?
I don't know. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I have my brights on and I'm just not thinking about other people.
Okay. What are you thinking about?
Freaking tired I am.
You're tired. Do you sleep well?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
No.
What's your life like?
Busy.
Okay. How do you feel about other people that are on this road with you?
In my freaking way.
What's that?
They're in my way. There's one in every lane.
Okay. They're in my way. There's a car in every lane. You can't get by. It's frustrating. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So how would you feel if I were to tell you that the woman in front of you is really annoyed by you because you have your brights on?
I don't care.
Why don't you care?
She should move over.
Where would she go? And if she moved over, what merit would that gain you?
She moves over, and I'm behind the next car.
Okay. But you just don't care about the other people on the road. I think that's what's being established, correct?
I just need them to move.
What's that?
I need them to move.
Okay. Now, allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Jaquetta. Who am I speaking to?
This is Jaquetta.
Okay. Can you think of a time in your life when you felt this exact same way?
Of course.
Of course.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, you may or may not know that your brights are on sometimes. You know, it's so interesting when I've made a driving faux pas, and then somebody gets really mad at me. And I immediately think, oh, it's not like this person has never made that same driving faux pas. I mean, we're all so facetious, aren't we? And so when you walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, you can begin to realize that you too have been there. You too can be that person that just doesn't care about anybody else and they just want these people to get out of their way. So what did you get from that?
I know it, and I say it every morning. It's like, you know, you have one job between now and getting to work, and that is to just not be part of the problem. And then whoever it is with the super bright lights, when I'm in the left lane, passing everybody on my right, roars up on my ass and just beams those lithium bulbs, and you can't see.
And have you ever heard the term? Hold on, I'm going to stop for a second. Have you ever heard the term,
okay,
you're not in traffic, you are traffic?
Oh, totally. It's all I can do to not brake check them. The only reason I don't brake check them is I don't want to die.
Right.
If you know what brake check is.
Okay, yes, I do.
Yep.
Well, here's the thing. It's like we think these, we don't want to be part of the problem, right? The problem is there's lots of traffic and everybody hates each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hating other people is making you part of the problem. Do you get that?
I get that. And we're not doing 45. We're already doing 70.
Okay.
And if anybody screws up, we're all going over the side.
So what's the takeaway from all this, though? You know, I look at the three people that have pissed me off in the last 24 hours. And I want to give you guys an analogy. So there was somebody that was kayaking in the lake, and they put their hand in the water, and it was just an oil slick. And they're like, son of a bitch, somebody is dumping oil in my lake. And they started looking around, like, is there a refinery? You know, is there a leaky engine, a boat engine nearby? Like, what is going on? And frantically looking around for the cause and the problem, and just furious. And then you realize that it's your own hand and it's your sunblock. So I have a million analogies like this, where it's like we look to just kind of blame all the other people. That person's an asshole. That person was rude. That person didn't listen to me. This person is in my way. This person is flashing their lights. But we never take the time to really, well, I say never, but we don't take enough time to really recognize our own transgression in this. You know, you are in this person's way. You know, and you too have put the high beams on and maybe not realized it. You know, I have listened to somebody before, give me their schedule, and completely forgotten about and booked it. Like, I have been angry at somebody and been rude to a total stranger in public, and on and on and on. So the question is, you know, can we own our shit? Can we own our own delusion? And in Zen, all that these monks do their entire lives in a monastery, meditating, all of that, is just seek to own their own delusion. You know, the highest level of achievement in Zen is to wake up and realize that you too are traffic, that you too are rude. You know, my teacher one time asked to speak to the voice of the abuser in me, and I'm like, oh, I'm not an abusive person. This is going to be interesting. 6 hours later, you know, in one voice, picked apart me and maybe 10 other students, we owned all the ways in which we are abusive towards each other, towards strangers, towards ourselves, towards our teachers, towards our animals, you know, my love, like, and on and on. And you keep dissecting it, and you begin to realize more and deeper, further and further, your own delusion. And that can be a very insightful experience. Do you have any questions? And that goes for anybody, not just Aquetta. And so it helps, you know, it helps because it's really easy to just pull the victim card and blame other people. But when you start to, and anybody that's married knows this, own your shit and own your own part in it, then you start to get along with other people better. You know, if ever I'm in an argument with my husband, the first thing I try to do, usually, instead of just blame him, you know, that's maybe the first thing I do is blame him. And then the second thing I do is then take a moment to just go inside and just own my shit. Like, how did I create this problem? You know, what was my part in this? And that's a really lovely Zen thing to do. Okay, open the question box up even further. Anybody else?
Andrew, I'm sorry I'm a little late. I had a problem with Skype, but yeah, I agree with that. Also, look inside our own responsibility with everything that happens around.
Right, and I like that word, responsibility, like taking responsibility for creating some portion of this problem. Somebody else is going to say something?
Well, I was going to say, I think it's sometimes interesting to think of what else it could be. Like, we have so little knowledge of what's going on with somebody. We don't know if that person's child was in a severe car accident the night before, or they were hurt, or they were scared, or whatever the case may be, and they turned their brights on to get home, and then now they're trying to get up and get to work. Like, there's so many different scenarios that go on with people, and unless we stop and hear their stories, we have no idea. And I think sometimes just asking, what else could it be? Are we just going to run into assholes periodically? Hell yes! But are we going to periodically run into people that are well-intended but just forgot because life has thrown them a shit sandwich?
Right. Or somebody who's in a big rush. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've turned into an asshole driver when I'm in a big rush. I tailgate people. I pass them in a no-passing zone. Like, oh, my gosh, I'm late. I can't be late. Like, you know, we've all been late for something. And then you think,
right,
oh, this person's an asshole, and then you try to cut them off and you give them the bird. It's like, but we've all been there. But what is going to help us to remember that, you know, when we're in the moment and somebody's an asshole? Well, practice. You know, you keep practicing.
You remember something funny that happened to me like 2 days ago? I was driving and I was getting my water bottle to drink water, and I horned the, you know, I made that noise with the car, the horn. And I thought, like, how funny. If somebody does that, I will think, like, what's wrong? What am I doing wrong, you know? And then I thought, well, it was a mistake. And it has happened to me a couple of times. And I always think of that. Like, the people in front might think that I'm doing it because of them, and it's just not because it was an accident.
Right. And each time you have that insight, it's very, very helpful. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you recognize what your faux pas are, like, I'm a pretty conscientious driver, but when my mom was flown by helicopter to a hospital, yeah, I wasn't so much. And so recognizing now that somebody else could be driving that particular way because of something that I don't know what's going on, I can choose to be right or I can choose to be happy.
Right.
And either way, it's going to affect my day. So if I choose to be happy instead of, I might have every right to be in the left lane and doing what I'm doing, but is it making me happy? And what is going to set me up for the rest of my day?
Taking that a step further, you know, if you're trying to be right, can you be happy with that kind of snarkiness, you know? Because sometimes I'll catch myself just having imaginary conversations with somebody, but I notice it and I find it amusing, right? Can you have a sense of humor about what an asshole you can become? Can you have a sense of humor about what a bad driver you can also sometimes be? It's a dance, because you don't want to replace any negative experience with a positive one. You know, that new age kind of reframe can lead to repression. And so it's very delicate when you have that kind of snarky, angry, you know, road ragey, you know, super mad at the person behind you, super mad at the person in front of you. Like, can you also honor that part of you that feels self-righteous, that feels like a victim, you know, fill in the blank? Can you also honor that and maybe even have a sense of humor about it? And as an example, let me give you a story. So the captain of a ship is maneuvering his ship through the water, and all of a sudden he sees another ship coming off in the distance that's heading right towards him. And he's like, okay, well, you know, he starts getting on the radio saying, hey, you know, change your course, like, this is going to go bad, like, and flashing his lights and all of that, and the ship just kept coming right at him. And so he tried to divert and all that, but the ship, again, still kept coming at him, and he was starting to get desperate and taking more and more measures, and finally, sure enough, boom, both the ships hit each other. And he is just furious, and he jumps into a boat and goes over to the other ship and gets on deck and is ready to just yell and scream at whoever's driving this stupid ship, and then he realizes that the ship is unoccupied. There's nobody driving the ship. You know, it's an interesting story, right? And it gives you a perspective of, like, you know, more often than not, you're the problem. So any other comments or questions before we move on to the next question?
Did you mention something about the letter yet or not yet?
About the letter? Oh.
Death written for the anger.
For the lawyer.
To have no to fear. you sent us an email saying that we could write an Helena.
Oh, okay. And did you write something to me last minute, maybe?
I wrote it, yeah. Not last minute on the email, but I wrote it on a paper.
Oh, I didn't get it. What is your question?
Like, if you mentioned something about that letter, like, do we, because you said you write the letter to the seer and then you change the word you to me.
Oh. Okay.
And
how did that go?
Remember you sent us an email?
Uh-huh.
Well, it was interesting. But then,
well, hold on. How would you suggest? Are you guys aware of what she's talking about? In one of the emails I sent you, I suggested that you write a letter to Fear, like, hey, Fear, I hate you, I wish you would go away. And then you change the word you to I hate myself, I wish I would go away. Like, it's a reframe. So tell me, Helena, what your experience was.
Well, it was interesting because, it's a relationship that goes by causing pain, so it can be hurt because it's suppressed. So what I was thinking is now that you turn the page or you turn it into me, which is will be the relationship with myself.
Yes.
How would you suggest we keep working on that letter so the relationship will be nicer?
How I suggest that is I have a, and maybe Kirk can tell people how to do it. It's a $15 product, but if you know the right channel to go, it's only $7. It's called Change Your Language Around Fear. Basically, you talk to fear in a more inclusive, considerate way. And I have $7 product is basically a 10-page dictionary that you get the gist of, you know, like you read it, the whole 10 pages, and it goes inside, and then it just forever changes the way that you talk about fear to yourself, to other people. It has a profound effect on that letter that you would write maybe in the future instead of the one that you've already written. Kirk, are you on the call? Can you maybe tell people how to get to that? In the $7 way instead of the $15 way?
Yeah, I can send the link out.
Okay. Basically, change your language. You change your language, the way that you talk and speak about fear, because words are so important, mm-hmm. then it literally changes everything.
Right. Because I was thinking, like, the things that you have, we keep in our bodies, like, I have problems with my stomach that hurts or my jaw. I press so much on it at night that recently I, you know, had a problem with my teeth. Because of that, I have to wear the thing to stop that. So it's, I realized by writing it, like it's a suppression. It's like you have something suppressed and it's trying to communicate. in other ways. So it's not something I do in purpose. It's not something like I want to quiet, but yeah, it's, which maybe what I'm trying to look for is those things that are still there, in spite of all the other practices and stuff that hurt. It's like hurting oneself. It's like, who wants to do that?
And maybe when your dog is barking, you can put it on mute and let me just speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm really glad that you brought this up, because it is literally the most important thing you can do is change the way that you speak about fear to yourself, to other people, just in life in general. And it's one thing to get on these calls and get in theory what I'm trying to present to you about not suppressing fear, making friends with fear, all of that. You know, you get that in theory, that's one thing, but until you actually practice it and turn the relationship around, this is like going to a restaurant and just studying the menu and not actually ever ordering anything or eating anything and getting any nourishment from it. So that's why I really encourage the four steps. You know, ultimately, always come back to the four steps. And, you know, I forget too. And sometimes I'll be stuck for like a week or 2 weeks even where I'm grinding my teeth or I just feel off. And then I'll do the four steps. I'll just acknowledge that it's normal and natural to, you know, grind your teeth or feel like crap or fill in the blank, be in your head. Second step, what am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? How strong is it? Oh, it's usually fear. You know, if you think it's one thing, if you really look, if you can't figure it out, just assume it's fear. How strong is it? Where do you feel it? And then have I been resisting it? Absolutely, especially if you're grinding your teeth or especially if you're stuck or feeling bad. And then the fourth step, you just spend some quality time with it. And I'll tell you, I grind my teeth every once in a while. I do this even once for 2 minutes, and I stop grinding my teeth. Until, you know, 6 months later, and it happens again, and I forget, and then I do it again. And so please just keep coming back to practicing that you actually have to do the work. Just understanding it intellectually is not going to take you there. You actually have to do the work. You actually have to spend some time, some quality time feeling your fear in order for this process and what you've understood here during the support sessions to work.
Right.
Anybody
yeah,
have any questions?
I agree.
Okay. Well, I want to then go to Matthew's question, and I don't know if he's on the call, but it's a great question to end our final session. And
I am on the call.
Okay, great. If after the concepts you've been teaching have been learned and applied, and notice you say the word concepts, okay, which is a conception in our mind, is there a further layer or concept that you've been exploring that takes this or integrates it to an even higher level of life application or consciousness? So, again, concepts are great. But concepts actually don't feed you. You actually have to practice what I've been teaching in order for it to give you nourishment. So just know that the word concept is one thing, but application is another. So I really, first of all, encourage you guys to apply what you've learned. And as for answering your question, I will tell you that what we've done here, and a lot of you have been long-term clients, and a lot of you are very new, and you only came to a very short session with me, maybe in Michigan, or a session with me in Bali that lasted maybe 90 minutes. So you haven't really gotten the whole gamut of what I offer. And so usually when I work with a client, minimum 6 hours, just one-on-one facilitation or group facilitation, just to kind of take them into the whole the layers of what it looks like to own your shit, basically. But I think that we've definitely covered a lot of ground during these sessions. So first of all, what I want to outline here is that the historical Buddha is famous for saying a lot of things. One of the things he's famous for saying is there are only two mistakes that you can make in the path towards truth. The first is not getting started, and the second is not going all the way. So we have definitely gotten started and are well down the path of the path towards truth, the truth of who and what you are. We are up to 10,000 things any single moment, every single day. Now, I've worked with some clients for decades or more, and I have definitely helped them go all the way. And I, you know, what we've explored here are just kind of the first few steps. And if you do this, then you can't believe where this practice can actually take you. I'm actually reminded of, I think Popular Mechanics had an article in 1949, and it was talking about computers, and they predicted that within 50 years, by 1999, that computers, and this blew people's minds, would weigh less than 1.5 tons. That was their prediction. You know, can you see that we have exceeded all expectations? And on computers, I mean, in 1999, I believe computers weighed just a few ounces, not 1.5 tons. And so imagine now that you're starting on your journey and where you're hoping it would take you, and you're hoping that you can exceed all expectations, right? Not just get to where you think this might take you, but actually take you to just so above and beyond your wildest imaginations or expectations. So the process that I take people on is, first of all, getting them unstuck. You know, it's about asking good questions, playing our game, helping people own their shit, take these voices out of the basement, help you own your delusion like we kind of just did on the highway, right? And make no mistake, Matthew, everybody, this is a full-time job. I mean, it's a lifetime practice to own your shit. And it's kind of like, imagine your life being like a giant puzzle with pieces just laying all over the place. And our game of shift is a way to pick up these pieces one by one. And you know the language that suggests that you're healthy and functioning well. Get your ducks in a row. Get your act together. Be complete. Be whole, right? This kind of all suggests getting your puzzle pieces together one by one so that you create the puzzle that is your life and have it be a clear picture. And so these voices that I do, it's like one by one, they're different puzzle pieces. And some of the voices that I've worked with clients with over the years, I mean, you can't even believe some of the voices I've spoken to. I mean, I've spoken to greed, anger, ignorance. These are all pieces of the puzzle. Self-loathing. I mentioned the abuser. My teacher actually facilitated me in the voice of the abuser for 6 hours. I own this voice. That was a piece of the puzzle that was definitely missing and very important. He also spent 6 hours facilitating me in the voice of the baddest of the bad, the lowest of the low. And this was a really profound day that I spent with him in a small group of his more advanced students. And it was based on the premise that it was seen by an inmate in Auschwitz, a grown man taking a piece of food out of a starving baby's mouth in order to feed himself. Now think about that for a second. A grown man actually walked up to a baby, stuck his fingers in the baby's mouth, pulled the food out of the starving baby's mouth, and put it in his own mouth and walked away. I mean, it is literally the baddest of the bad, the lowest of the low that you can be as a human being. And the whole day started on the premise that until you realize that you too, because it's out there, it's in here, it's like you too, if given the right circumstances, are capable not only of just leaving your brights on in traffic and not realizing it, right, or being an asshole, or honking your horn inadvertently, but you too are capable in the right circumstances of taking a piece of food out of a starving baby's mouth in order to feed yourself. And you think, no way, no way, right? But we're all so connected. Literally, if it is out there, it is in here. It's like the web of life. Whatever you do to the web, you do to yourself. Whatever is out there is in here. So some of the voices that I facilitated, too, that are very, very intense and difficult with clients over the years, the one who's suicidal. You know, imagine if I facilitated that in you. The one who hates their father. And even if you love your father, you know, if I spoke to that voice, what kind of insights might you glean from that? Or if I spoke to the voice of the person who has been the most abusive to you in your life. Or earlier, if I spoke to the voice of Donald Trump, like what kind of insights could you glean from letting him use your mind and your voice and your, you know, to give you some perspective or some insights into what it's like to be him. But you can use this dialogue to see things from a completely new perspective, always and forever. And then the biggest one that I facilitated with people that we actually haven't had a chance to experience in this, because it's literally will take up 90 minutes for sure with anyone one-on-one, is the voice of false self, which is the part of you that gets established between age 2 and 12 that we take on as our core, and that how we live and walk and talk for the rest of our lives is determined by that. I call it false self because Ken Wilber calls it false self, but it's basically the part of you that can take a single comment from like a kid on the playground saying you're ugly and create a whole story around it, and then next thing you know, that story becomes your identity. And until you actually look at and address, you know, your false self or the part of you that was created between 2 and 12, it will hold you hostage. So I've just given you guys a big earful, but, you know, these are all of the voices over the years that I've facilitated with clients. And imagine now if you have, you know, looked at all of these pieces of the puzzle one at a time and fully owned your unique relationship with them, you know, figured out which ones are in the basement, taken them out of the basement, come to terms with them, like what kind of impact that will have on your life. And so I'm just going to pause for a moment and let you guys ask clarifying questions. That's one of three things that I help people do, but let's just pause here for a moment if you have questions. Okay, it sounds like nobody has any questions. Let's go to the next. And a lot of what we've been doing during these sessions is that first part. And the reason why is because I primarily make a living helping people get unstuck from unconscious patterns that don't work for them anymore. And getting people unstuck is to, one by one, just looking at these voices that we typically want nothing to do with. And I feel like we've made some good progress with some of the voices that we have spoken to in these last five weeks. So the second part of what I help people do is getting them in flow with these 10,000 voices. And when you think of flow, you know, you think of water, of course, which is not only about not locking them in the basement and kinking the hose and next thing you know you're not in flow, but also tapping into the resource found there. Like everybody wants to be in flow. That's the big buzzword in spiritual practice and sports and like when that's kind of the big word just to connote that you're having a healthy relationship with your life. You're in flow with it, right? When you are in flow with it, not only are you not locking any voice in the basement, but you're actually tapping into the wisdom and motivation and just energy that comes from all these 10,000 voices. And yes, that includes the wisdom and energy found in greed, anger, ignorance, the wisdom that comes from the insight that we have from being the voice of Donald Trump. You know, there is wisdom to be found in the part of you that's suicidal, the part of you that hates your father. You know, there is wisdom, of course, also to be found in the part of you that I call false self, the part of you that can be stuck in trauma or can be stuck in, what is the word I'm looking for? Your demons, your insecurities from childhood. Like, can you tap into the wisdom of all these? Because I tell you what, I did during my ski career, and it made me really great at a sport that was very, very difficult. I'm going to tell you a story. So I was at a competition in Colorado. It was the first big mountain extreme skiing competition ever in the history of the world, and there were about 120 skiers there, men and women, and I pretty much needed to win this thing. Otherwise, I was going to be humiliated because I was considered the best in the world. And it was the best of two runs, and after the first run, and I worry that I've told this story before. I'm not sure if I have. But it was this, I'm going to tell it again regardless. It was the second, the best of two runs, and after the first run, I was not winning. And in fact, the person who was beating me was this girl who was my nemesis, who was so mean to me, and I just, like, if nothing else, I just needed to not have her win, right? So I had about 2 hours to think about my second run, and I was in a state of the voice of humiliation. Now, of course, I didn't know about the voices back then. I didn't know this was going on. I was 24 years old, right? But I was feeling humiliation, anger at myself. I felt like a fraud. I felt like I was about to be found out that I really wasn't the best, that somebody else was better. I was terrified. You know, the pressure was, I had so much pressure on myself, internally, externally, from sponsors, all of that. Like, you can imagine that it could have been a living hell. And I spent a lot of time by myself, and I also re-skied the slope, and I just came up with a plan and scoped out a new line that was a little bit more dangerous, well, actually a lot more dangerous. And the thing is, I was in flow with all of these parts of me, all these negative, horrible, otherwise soul-sucking parts of me. I didn't try to get rid of any of them. Did I know this? What I was doing this? No, not at the time, but I can see it now. So my frustration, my embarrassment, my fear, all became these parts of me that I was tapping into to be motivated, to be present, to be alive and just ready by the time I got into the gate to just kick some serious ass. And I skied the second run, and I jumped off this huge cliff. I stuck the landing. I skied it great, and I took fourth overall for the men, you know, out of 120 skiers. And, of course, I won for the women. The second-place woman finisher was about 73rd. So I didn't just win. I killed it, right? So this is the second part of what I help people actualize, not just the delusion and the ignorance and the kind of repression and all that that implies that comes from putting these voices in the basement, but then tapping into not only taking them out of the basement and getting unstuck from that pattern, but the wisdom that these voices now offer you by having an honored place in your life. So that's the second part. And any questions? And Matthew, let's take a moment here to do a voice with you. You open for that?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, I'll have us do two voices. The first voice I want to explore addresses the first two things I've outlined, you know, not having a voice in the basement and then tapping into the wisdom of it. I want to do a really advanced voice with you. And this is something that I've kind of taken out of the course that I've created most recently, which is my PTSD course. And it is probably the voice that I'm most excited about right now, and I haven't facilitated it in many people. You ready?
Beautiful. Excited.
Okay. So this is, I mentioned an advanced voice, and this is not something you're going to be able to understand. And because these sessions are ultimately about fear, you know, this is not about flow, this is not about spiritual intelligence, this is a support package that's here to specifically address fear, I think this is going to be really interesting for you all. So everybody play along too, but Matthew, you're in the hot seat.
Beautiful.
Allow me please to speak to the voice of the fear beneath the fear. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of fear beneath the fear.
Okay. So you're not a voice that he's going to be able to cognitively understand. You're going to mostly show up as a feeling, a sensation, kind of the bigger picture. So just tell me what it's like to be you.
It's tiring, but it's...
So but say I. Start your sentences with cool. I. Say I. Say I.
I
feel.
I feel it is tiring, but I feel it is a very important role that I perform.
Tell me about this role that you perform.
My role is important, otherwise I wouldn't exist, firstly. My role is I'm deep in your DNA and I've been put in there over hundreds of thousands of years for your protection and for your survival.
So you're a bigger picture version of the earth.
Your pardon?
I get the impression you're a bigger picture. You know, there's like the small view of fear, and then you seem to be the kind of the bigger all-encompassing kind of core.
I'm definitely the all-encompassing protector.
Okay. And I would have to say that most humans are completely unaware of you.
Most humans are scared of me.
Why are they scared of you? Are you so scary?
I'm actually not scary. I'm just at the gateway. I'm at the gateway of consequence. So most humans get scared at my presence and at my existence, but most humans don't understand that if I didn't exist, most humans don't understand they need me to actually live a full and happy life.
And they probably don't understand that humans wouldn't even exist without you. They wouldn't have survived.
Humanity wouldn't exist without me. I'm a function of God and or spirituality or the universe or whatever your term is to reference that. And therefore I am a part of God, universe, or whatever people's term is to reference the higher power. So I'm as much a part of God as love is part of God. Much a part of creation as love is part of creation. And I'm actually performing a role that is necessary, but one that paradoxically humans shouldn't be fearful of, the feeling of fear that I give them. So paradoxically, don't be scared, but my role is just understand that my role is an know, I'm in the chili in the meal that you need to make it spicy or something, with making it a bit more playful and not as heavy. But yeah, I'm there for everyone. I'm there to serve your higher purpose. I'm there to assist love in a way. I'm there to assist your growth. I'm there to assist your evolution. I'm there to protect you. And as a consequence of my role, I can set off alarm bells within the humans, but that's my job. But it's done with love.
The wonderful thing about this game is that I can ask a simple question and can tap into just such a huge universal wisdom and truth. Thank you, that was beautiful. And it's nice to meet you.
Thank you.
And this is where we segue into the third part of what I teach, which is once that freedom is attained of kind of taking voices out of the basement, accessing all the many parts of us, putting all the puzzle together, expanding who you are to include the 10,000 voices, and then the 10,000 voices beneath the 10,000 voices. You know, all of a sudden, you can access true self. Not just false self anymore, but true self. You know, you are an exactly perfect, already complete and whole, pre-functioning human being with highs and lows. And we can tap into now an experience of 10,000 musical instruments in your orchestra, just playing this beautiful music together, and have an experience beyond something that is your logical mind. Tapping into other parts that make you you. I talk about in my book the four different intelligences. You know, there's mental, there's emotional, which we've been exploring a lot here. There's physical intelligence, the wisdom of your body, and then there's spiritual intelligence, which is any kind of intelligence that is beyond logic, beyond reason, beyond your thoughts. And so the third thing that I help people do that I'm really excited about, and I very rarely get to do this because usually I'm just helping people, you know, deal with the stuff that's locked in the basement, is taking them into a physically embodied experience of something beyond their mind. And some of the voices that I facilitated over the years with clients have been the space between your thoughts. I did one recently that's kind of my favorite, the space alien looking down on this bizarre place called planet Earth. Right? God having a Matthew experience. I mean, imagine if I spoke to that voice right now. The voice of Om is another one of my most favorites these days. Do you know that each, this is fascinating, each planet, you know, has a specific look and it's made up of specific things, but it also has a specific sound. You can actually hear the sound of these planets. And the sound of planet Earth is actually Om. And that's why people who do yoga or meditate, they chant Om, because that's them tapping into the sound of the entire planet. And so doing the voice of Om, you know, imagine what that connects you to. Universal mind. You know, instead of the small mind or Kristen's mind or Matthew's mind. Another interesting one is the newborn. You know, can we start over for a moment? So imagine if I facilitated any of these voices, and what then becomes possible? Like, what kind of perspective can you get on your life, on the planet, on the drivers, you know, at 5 a.m. in the morning, you know, what kind of perspective is then available to you about it all? And so, Matthew, I thought I'd give you two choices. You mentioned God. I mentioned Om being the sound of the planet. I'll give you a choice. Would you rather have me facilitate you in the voice of God having a Matthew experience or the voice of Om? Which do you prefer?
I'm happy with either one, God as the Matthew experience, or I'm very familiar with the voice of Om. Om might be something different. Yeah.
Okay. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Om. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of Om.
So you hear the sound of the planet. You have a name, you know, which is Om.
Yes.
But you are also unique in Matthew. So in many ways, your name is also Matthew. So Om is having a Matthew experience. We could look at it that way as well. But as the voice of Om, just tell me about you.
As having the Matthew experience, or just as the voice of Om?
Whatever you prefer. And let me just paint a picture. Let me paint a picture here. It's like what I just did is I want you to picture a triangle, and I'll send you this image. You know, Matthew asked what comes next, and so this is what comes next. So there's Matthew, let's say, on the bottom right-hand side of the triangle, and then there's the voice of you, Om, over here to the left-hand side. It's like you're beyond his ability to grasp or reason or be logical about. You're a bigger picture experience, which would make you a spiritual experience. You're on the left-hand side. And so we could either speak to the voice of you on the left-hand bottom side of this triangle, or we could transcend and include you and transcend and include Matthew on the lower right-hand side, and you could be Matthew as the voice of Om, or the voice of Om having a Matthew experience. So we could either have you speak as the left-hand side, or we could have you speak as the apex of the triangle. Do you follow?
Totally. And, I totally get it now. Yeah.
Okay. So I had to engage your logical mind to get that. So now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Om that either includes Matthew. Well, of course you include Matthew. But
I can do either. That's
more...
why I paused. So
right.
I could speak
so
as the voice of Om,
who am I
having a universal experience, or I could be... speak of the voice of Om or God having a Matthew experience. I could do either.
Okay. Or Om having a Matthew experience. So who am I speaking to? Let's start with the left-hand side. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Om.
You are speaking to the voice of Om.
Okay. Spend a moment, all of us. Just notice what it's like to be you, what you hear.
I hear, feel, and see everything, past, present, and future simultaneously.
What do you include?
It includes absolutely everything.
I include everything.
Beg your pardon?
Say I.
I.
Because you're an I.
See and feel everything. I know everything. I am everything. I am the desk. I am the person in that car that's blocking that other lady. I am the car. I am that lady. I am you. I am me. I am the baby version of you. I am the adult and old person. I am the dead version of you. I am everything simultaneously, all at the same time. There is no time, in fact. That is Om. I am Om, and that is my description.
Is there anything that you're not?
It is impossible. I am everything. It is impossible for anything to be anything.
Do you have preferences?
That I am not. Beg your pardon?
Do you have preferences?
I expand and evolve on the plane of love and expansion, and I have no judgment.
Do you include the man who took a piece of food out of a starving baby's mouth in order to feed himself?
I am that man. I am the food. I am the baby.
What are time and space to you?
Time is a concept, a human concept that the humans have invented. Space is my playground of expansion.
Allow me now, please, to speak to the apex of the triangle, the voice of you, Om, that includes and embraces Matthew, Matthew having an Om experience. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to Matthew having an Om experience or Om having a Matthew experience?
Okay.
They're both the same.
How are you different from the voice of Om?
I perform a role as Matthew performing Om, just like what we've worked on for the last few weeks, where our emotions perform a role, fear, etc. I'm just a packaged up human performing Dharma or performing, I'm an expression of Om as required by Om, even though I am Matthew talking to you as Matthew as Om now.
There are two ways of viewing the human experience or life. Either that we are human beings looking to have a spiritual experience or spiritual beings looking to have a human experience. From your perspective, which are those two feels more true?
Most definitely I am a spiritual being, having some fun in this human experience.
Okay. And I want you to look at Matt, who sometimes gets caught in rush hour traffic and
he's a fucking psycho when he does that.
And last question, what advice do you have to give to the self? And let everybody also really contemplate this right now. So what advice do you have to give to Matthew?
Remember, probably just love, honestly. I think love covers it all. I could waffle on, give you 10 examples around, you know, remember we're all God, or remember we're all the same thing, and blah, 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 but it, my advice is just come back to a place of love, and don't be hard on yourself when you get it wrong. Or when you, because there is no wrong, don't be hard on yourself. Don't be hard on yourself, full stop.
I like that. That's really nice. And if you can love the 10,000 parts of you as they exist in yourself, and the practice is also to love the 10,000 parts of the people in your life as best you can as well. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Love and acceptance to self and others is my preference or my preferred starting and returning place for the day.
So it's interesting that the voice of Om didn't really have preferences as much as Matthew has preferences. And so by combining the two, you know,
Matthew, having the Om experience, had
right.
a few preferences.
Right, absolutely. You know, so we're coming back down to having a human experience here. It's like we want to love. You know, that's what we want. You know, can we love all parts of ourselves? Can we find a way to have love for the person that's being mean to us? You know, that is the ultimate, I guess, expression of our greatest potential as a human being.
So no, I agree.
Somebody,
and I think you've expanded it to love, acceptance, and compassion.
I prefer, instead of acceptance, honoring. Because acceptance kind of feels passive, where honoring feels more exalted and like the next level.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
It resonates true as well.
Yeah. How's that for a plan, everyone? You know, love your 10,000 voices. Love all parts of life. Alligators. You know, I know it's hard to love Trump for those of you that are not Trump supporters. I know that it's hard to love or have compassion for the man that takes a piece of food out of a starving baby's mouth. You know, if we can get there, we have really, truly arrived at a beautiful place. And also loving the part of us that doesn't love, that hates. Anybody have anything they want to add? I know we've gone quite over our time. Anybody have any burning questions or desires to add to what we've explored? Back to the Buddha. There are only two paths that you can, or mistakes that you can make on the path towards truth. Not getting started, which we've all done. Not going all the way. You know, here's what going all the way looks like. You know, what's the difference between most people and Einstein? Well, if you ask most people, you know, go find a needle in a haystack, they'll either flat out say, hell no, or they'll make a little bit of an effort, and then they give up, saying it's too hard, I have other things to do. Somebody will put a lot of effort in, they'll find a needle and be like, success, okay, now it's time to get on with my life. But the difference between us and Einstein is Einstein would find that needle, and he'd keep looking, and he'd find another needle. And then he'd keep looking, and he'd find another needle. And that's what it means to go all the way. Like, can we keep asking questions? Can we keep our practice up? Can we keep going past the end of, you know, either AFAST or our therapy help or reading this book or doing these four series of sessions on Monday nights? Like, can we keep looking and asking and being curious? So what we've been exploring is Zen. And I found that you don't pick Zen, Zen picks you. You know, each of you are here on some level because you had an experience with me and you thought, this is a good practice for me. So Zen basically has picked you. If you want to go all the way, keep practicing. Call me for more voice dialogue. You know, let's keep putting more pieces of the puzzle together. Or practice on your own. Do the four steps. You know, the way that I've condensed shadow practice, you know, the first two steps. And it kind of gives you a more richer, more instrumental version of yourself. You know, each time you do this practice, you have one more piece of the puzzle put together. And I want to finish by giving you an analogy in the form of a story. So a monk and a master were working together, and the master instructed the monk to put a tablespoon of salt into a glass of water, stir it up, and take a sip. And the monk complied, he did it, and it was absolutely ghastly, undrinkable, made him sick. Then the monk took him to a lake, and the master instructed the monk to put a tablespoon of salt into the lake, stir it up, and take a sip from the lake. And the monk did this, and it was no problem. So our practice has been about fear. And so what this story and what this analogy gives us is if you stay small, let's say the fear is that salt in the glass, your despair, your anger, your sadness, is that salt in that small glass of water, if you stay small, it's going to be undrinkable, unpalatable. But if you expand who you are to the size of a lake, the size of, you know, beyond the lake, then it's going to be much more tolerable, much more easy to drink. And so I always finish by putting my hands together and thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. It expands who you are, it expands who I am, and it also expands the entirety of the world. So thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me these last 5 weeks. I bow to you. And that's it. Good job, you guys.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you for your time as well, and thanks for listening to all our questions and putting the various people in the hot seat as needed. Very appreciative.
Okay, thank you. And I will be in touch. You know, we'll send you that language guide link. I'm going to send you the triangle, which we didn't really get to very much. Something that I've been working with, and I come and go from it for the last 15 years. It's really interesting. You may not be able to really understand what you're looking at because we only touched upon it, but I think you'll find it interesting to dissect. And always write me. I will always write you back if you have any questions. If I don't write you back, it's because I didn't get your email. So that is my promise to you, and I hope that we can do this again sometime, either in this format or in another format. Thank you again.
Thanks.
Thank you, and have a good Christmas and New Year as well.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
Carol.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Happy holidays.